Small businesses are the cornerstones of our local communities, and small business owners are hardworking and passionate people who are chasing down their ambitions while there's a lot on the line. So, let Verizon champion your small business dreams. Whether you own a small business, are scaling one, or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon business experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon business expert. Plus, Verizon business experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon, well, they've got you back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business.
So why do you want to learn a new language?
I'll tell you why. Because ¿dónde está el baño? Can be a very important question at times. You know, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. Fast track your language acquisition with immersive lessons designed to teach you to pick up languages in a natural way. I love the fact that I can go from my laptop to my phone to pretty much anywhere and learn the language of my choice. Not to mention, I'm bringing my communication skills to new heights. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a limited time, StarTalk Radio listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/StarTalk. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/StarTalk today.
Welcome to Star Talk, your place in the universe where science and pop culture collide. Star Talk begins right now. This is Star Talk. Neil deGrasse Tyson here, your personal astrophysicist. And this is going to be a Cosmic Queries edition on the subject of mending the ozone layer. Chuck, my co-host, it's good to have you here, Chuck.
Always a pleasure. Very excited for this.
Yeah, you know, that ozone layer got mended. That's a thing. I didn't think we could do that.
Like a pair of socks that we darned. It's like, oh, I have a hole in the toe of my planet. How do I sew that up?
It got darned. It got darned. So my two guests, Susan Solomon and Stephen Anderson. Chuck, have you ever heard of them?
As a matter of fact, I have.
Oh, because you're a learned man. Most people haven't. And what's weird is to have not heard of someone who actually save the world.
Okay? Exactly.
This is just a weird fact that such a thing could even exist.
And I'm in the process of working on two Marvel characters and patterning them after these two.
Very good.
Well, Susan and Steven.
Well, let's get...
wearing the capes and everything, Neil. Capes and all.
Capes and everything. Well, let's take that moment to introduce Susan Solomon. Welcome to Star Talk. Stephen Anderson, welcome. Welcome. And if you give me a moment to give some of your background here, you each received the Future of Life Award. That's even a thing. That's a thing. For your contributions to mending the hole in the ozone layer. And it's given this award. I'm so glad this award exists because, you know, it's given to unsung heroes, people who were under-recognized relative to what they actually accomplished in improving the world. And so, they also participated in the Nobel Prize for Peace when it was given to the International Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, in 2007 for their contributions to those reports. So, they're, you know, unlike most of us, they're trying to make the world a better place.
Right.
And so let's go back in time briefly to 1989, something called the Montreal Protocol, an international treaty. You know, before there was the Paris, you know, talks and the treaties that went on there, we had the Montreal Protocol back in 1989. And that was trying to protect the ozone layer by phasing out the production of molecules, substances known to deplete it. And sometimes people refer to it as the most successful treaty of our day. And Susan, you're an atmospheric chemist. I love it. And yeah, and you're a professor of environmental studies at MIT in an endowed chair, the Lee and Geraldine Martin Professor of Environmental Studies up in Cambridge. And you spent most of your career with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And Chuck, you know, I love it because the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, they concern themselves with the ocean and the atmosphere, right? Yeah. And but if you pronounce the acronym, it's NOAA. I just thought that was cool.
Yes. Which is kind of cool.
I guess Noah himself didn't need Noah because he had God telling, look, it's going to rain in 40 days.
Yeah, exactly. Noah, don't listen to those people mocking you.
And we have Stephen Anderson here, Director of Research, American Director of Research for the Institute for Governance and Sustainable Development. Man, you guys are doing such good stuff. Man,
yeah, man.
What am I doing here with this podcast? I want to hire me to do that. And you're co-chair of the Montreal Protocol for Technology and Economic Assessment Panel. So this is how people they contribute via all of these panels. And you also were a liaison to the Department of Defense from the Environmental Protection Agency. So you are the right people for this for this formulation here. So,
and Neil,
what?
Neil, now that we have the requisite introductions out of the way, I just have to do this for both of these fine scientists.
What is that?
That is applause, my friend.
Oh, that's applause. Okay.
That's a great deal of applause. A rousing applause is what that is.
All right, so let me ask you guys, Susan, let me begin with you. How does this happen? I mean, somebody has to first discover that there's an ozone layer, that it has value to us, that it's getting depleted, that we are responsible for it, and then we have to do something about it, then create a committee, and then an international gathering, and then everybody has to agree to it, and then actually implement it. Who ever thought that was possible in this world?
It seems kind of like a miracle, doesn't it? I mean,
it is
just amazing that it happened. And Neil, I want to tell you, you are so perfect. I mean, you're great, but actually the Montreal Protocol was signed in 1987, not 1989.
Oh,
so, no biggie. No biggie.
Oh, right.
But,
okay.
Neil, that's 24 months of failure.
So, long story short, I guess, in 1974, two scientists who later won the Nobel Prize for Chemistry, Molina and Rowland, they won it together with Paul Crutzen. But Molina and Rowland's big contribution was to alert the world to the idea that the chlorofluorocarbons might someday deplete the ozone layer. Now, we thought this was going to be a small effect, a couple of percent, 100 years in the future. Sound kind of like another problem the way some people talk about it?
Yeah, don't get us started on that. Oh, my gosh.
Used to talk about it. But the interesting thing is that although they had certain things correct, they did not anticipate that things could be even worse than they thought. So it turned out...
Just quickly, Susan, you said chlorofluorocarbons. That sounds like a word with one or two too many syllables. So tell us what the chlorofluorocarbon is.
Well, you can picture a methane molecule. I guess most people have heard of methane, swamp gas, or what you put in your natural gas system, maybe.
And I have to explain it to Chuck. Chuck, it's what you try to ignite at camp.
Absolutely.
Right. That's it. Right. So take that molecule and just tear off all the hydrogens and put in fluorine and chlorine instead, and you've got a chlorofluorocarbon.
Oh, interesting.
And the most important ones are chlorofluorocarbon 11 and 12, which I'm not going to give you the chemical formulas for, but most of the chlorine that's causing the problem is in that form. And then there's a whole zoo of other compounds, 113, 114, 115.
And where did it come from? Where does it come from?
So we were using these molecules in ever-increasing amounts. And ironically, the main source was actually in your medicine cabinet, in things like hairspray and deodorant. But it was also, you know, oven cleaner and paint and anything else that you sprayed out of a can had chlorofluorocarbons in them to make the stuff come out the nozzle. It was a propellant.
Oh, okay.
It's used for other things, too. It's used as the cooling agent in refrigerators. It was used, I should say. It was used in foams. So, you know, foam insulation in the walls of homes that were built in, you know, like the 60s and 70s. We don't use any chlorofluorocarbon in those applications anymore. And yet we still have spray cans. We still have refrigerators.
What do you know? We still have air conditioners.
I mean, yes. Isn't
the society didn't collapse.
Technology right. is amazing. You know, you can actually do things lots of different ways, which is what Steve's group helped us to show. So, you know, we were gaily spraying our hair. You remember those horrible hairstyles of the 70s? You know, mm-hmm, people. Mm-hmm. So,
Big hair needed
beehives.
Hairspray.
Beehives. Right. Remember mm-hmm. the beehives? They were great. Yeah, so then these guys said, hey, if we keep doing this, we might deplete the ozone layer. And the amazing thing is that people actually said, oh, well, what can we do about it? And the answer was, well, you know, one thing you could do is throw away your spray deodorant and get the roll-on instead. Mm. And a lot of people said, oh, well, that's not really very hard, is it? So a lot of people did it in this country. Not in a lot of other countries, actually. It wasn't so in Europe, which was the other major producer.
Wait a minute. Yep. They use deodorant in Europe? I don't know, Susan. You might want to check your sources.
Wait, let me ask. Wait, Steven.
I'm not even going to go near that.
Right, I know. Just remind you, he's a comedian.
Right? I got it.
Steven, let me ask you. How do you tell people to get rid of what they have if in that moment you don't have something to replace it with? Or did you?
That's exactly the question. And I would just add to what Susan said before we move on, that one of the stimulants for action was these scientists, Sherwood Rowland and Mario Molina, after 6 months of relative silence after the publication of their warning, went to the American Chemical Society and called for a boycott by citizens of hairspray and deodorant. So these are scientists that are activist scientists. They were right out there. And then the industry, fortunately, in a strange way, reacted so strongly against them that it sensationalized the news. And it spread across the world. And Susan mentioned some Nordic countries, United States and Canada banned these products. And then to get to your question, even as the boycott began, there were companies that broke from industry and introduced the alternatives. And so there were pumps and sprays and roll-ons and lots of alternatives. And then very quickly, they found a new aerosol propellant that was not ozone depleting, and they introduced that. So you had this creative tension within the industry, within the aerosol industry, where some of the companies, SC Johnson and Menon and others, were in favor of protecting the ozone layer, and they won against their competition, penetrated the market. The products were banned, and as Susan mentioned, you hardly noticed that these product changes were occurring. And then later, with the Montreal Protocol, it was a much more organized process, the part that I worked on with the Montreal Protocol was to evaluate technology, promote the best of the technology, and then very importantly, to discourage the alternatives that were inferior in one way or the other. So they were very successful at not trading one problem for another and actually making overall improvement very quickly.
So there's a lesson here that if you want to make systemic change domestically or internationally, you got to, it's for it to work swiftly and effectively, it's got to, you've got to sort of energize all parts of that beast or that machine that is, that ultimately is the force of change in this world.
Yeah, your money.
Sorry, that's the word.
I understand. I have three scientists in front of me, you know, but I can say it, money. Like, that's what happened. We had the free market. You had some pressure by science. You had
money.
a portion of the marketplace say, hey, I'm going to respond. That creates competition. Then before you know it, it's like, hey, I don't want to lose any of this money. Forget, I'm spraying money away.
Wait, so Susan,
you're right, Chuck, but you left out something really important, and that is people. The fact that people really cared about this issue, they actually understood and could perceive that the idea of having more ultraviolet light falling on them if there was less ozone. Everybody knows the ozone layer protects us from ultraviolet light from the sun. And we don't want to get sunburned. It hurts. It's bad for us. We get skin cancer. We get cataracts. The plants get sick. You know, lots of bad things. People cared about it because they could see what was going on. So don't forget the importance of public interest. It's huge in any environmental problem.
Yeah, otherwise, you're arguing in a void. And even if you're right, it'd be difficult, if not impossible, to gain traction. Yeah, that makes me worry about future problems that don't have ways to get traction, yet they still need to be implemented for the survival of the species. Now you got me all worried.
No, don't worry. Don't worry. Have you seen Greta Thunberg going out there?
Oh, yeah.
Happening. It is Greta. Definitely happening. The young people today are incredibly environmentally conscious.
That's true. I can't wait till they take over because the world we messed up. I mean, at what time in the history of the universe has the adult population ever said, can't wait till the youngins take over to fix things? That's never happened, ever. And this, we might be living in that for the very first time. We got to take a break, but when we come back, we'll take questions from our fan base, from our Patreon fan base, because they all know we have a scientifically literate audience. And so I think they'll be delighted to know they have access to the two of you. And Chuck, you've collated the questions. So when we come back, Cosmic Queries, Mending the Ozone Layer, when we return.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me too.
and at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
Do you want to set up your child for success? Of course you do. Maybe you want to save money on private tutoring, or maybe it's just out of your budget altogether. Is this a big school year for your child? Like maybe they're starting kindergarten, middle school, or high school, or some other milestone. Maybe your family moved and they're starting at a new school. Is your child ahead? Not getting challenged enough in class? Well, we love that little smarty, but we want them to be engaged. IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids covering math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help them really understand and master topics in a fun way. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or the personality. There's one site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Kids can use it at home on the computer or on the go through the app on your phone or your tablet. No more grading those worksheets. IXL grades everything itself. And no more trying to figure out how to explain math equations or grammar rules yourself. IXL has built-in explanation videos. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Star Talk Radio listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/StarTalk. Visit IXL.com/StarTalk to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Hi, I'm Chris Cohen from Haworth, New Jersey, and I support Star Talk on Patreon. Please enjoy this episode of Star Talk Radio with your and my favorite personal astrophysicist, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
We're back. Star Talk Cosmic Queries, mending the ozone layer. Somebody had to do it. And so we got two people in the house, in the virtual Zoom house, who were under-celebrated for what it is they achieved. And it's time more people knew their names. I've got Susan Solomon, an atmospheric chemist, and Stephen Anderson, who has who spent a career worrying and thinking about sort of how to create sustainable civilization and what you need to do about that and making it something real rather than just something we've all imagined. And so here we are. And we solicited questions from our fan base.
Yes.
About mending the ozone layer. So Chuck, what do you have coming up?
Before we go, can I just ask, just so that people can know, because we do, Susan said it, you know, everybody knows about ultraviolet light and the ozone protects us from that. So can you guys just, I mean, all three of you or any of you, give us, how does that happen? Why does that happen?
This might be the only thing I can contribute to this podcast.
Go for it, Neil.
So can I take my stab at this? Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, so the 21% of the air we breathe is oxygen, and most of it is not oxygen, it's nitrogen. And so that oxygen itself is in a form of two oxygen atoms combined, and we call it O2. O2. That's what we breathe. That's what sustains us. The nitrogen is just filler, basically, relative
to our...
It's
the bread in our crab cake.
Survival. It's filler. Okay. That's a
right, exactly.
That'd be too much bread for my crab cake, actually. But, okay, so there's a form of oxygen that it has three oxygen atoms, and it's O3, and that's called ozone. And ozone has the property, which is if you have ultraviolet light that strikes that molecule, that's sufficient energy to break the molecule apart back into oxygen and an O2. And so So, well, so you say, what happened to the UV? It's gone. It goes into the kinetic energy of those two, of the two resulting particles. And so it's gone. So the ultraviolet from the sun, so I get the right number from our two guests, 97, 98, 99% of the UV from the sun does not reach Earth's surface because of the ozone. So even when you do get sunburned,
wow,
that's from the little bit that gets through after the ozone is trying to do its best. And so if you take out the ozone layer, that's the end of life on Earth as we know it, life on Earth's surface, because ultraviolet light and biology are incommensurate. ultraviolet has enough energy to break apart biological molecules. How did I do, Stephen and Susan?
You did great. You did great. I mean, at the very end, you said the key thing, which is that the UV light hitting your skin or hitting your eyes is enough to actually damage your DNA, and wow, that's what causes, you know, cancer. So, mm-hmm. So the only other thing that I would add is that every 1% change in the ozone layer is estimated to cause a 2 to 3% increase in skin cancer in light-skinned people. Mm-hmm. So it's not as much of a problem in dark people, but it's not zero problem either. And everybody's got the same problem with their eyes. It doesn't matter whether they're blue or brown or black. Your eyes will still be subject to cataracts because the light gets through and damages your retina. So it's not good news. And it's indiscriminate to, you know, whether you put the stuff up wow there or not. So it's happening all around the world. We've got
to finally.
I got to whisper something to Chuck. Chuck. Okay, wait, Chuck. So it all that stopped so quickly because
and I was going to say,
white people and the white people in charge.
I was going to say, that's finally, finally,
don't tell anybody.
One good thing just about being a black man. Finally.
Don't be too sanguine, Chuck. I don't want you to get cataracts.
This is true.
And you still can.
I wear sunblock every day. Not because I'm worried about UV rays. It's just because I want to look good.
You want to glow. Yeah, exactly. You want to glow.
I don't want to age from the sun. All right, well, listen. That was amazing. That was great. That was great.
Okay,
right,
so what do you have?
Samuel Case,
have,
who Chuck? Says, hello, big brains and Chuck. Well, what can I do, right? He goes, I love you all and thank you for your gift of knowledge. I run a small AC company in Phoenix, Arizona, and I have been directly affected by legislation regarding climate change. In particular, the 2014 phasing out of HCFC R22. I was wondering if you could explain the actual effects of chlorine or refrigerants on the atmosphere itself. Thank you and for giving me this small opportunity to play a part in the exploration of our planet. This is Samuel Case.
Very cool. So I guess the question is, what is actually going on up there? There's the ozone minding its own business, the O3 molecule, and now this jumbo chlorofluorocarbon molecule meets it. So now take us through that.
Yeah, let me go through that because this air conditioning case is very interesting. He's absolutely right that HCFC 22 depletes the ozone.
Uh-huh.
And it's also a greenhouse gas, powerful greenhouse gas. So here we have a refrigerant that was once used in every air conditioner of small size everywhere in the world. And then under the Montreal Protocol, they're phasing out that chemical. The last uses are occurring in developing countries and for servicing of old air conditioning that hasn't been replaced. So the chlorine in this chemical, as Susan mentioned, migrates to the stratosphere, destroys the ozone, and harms people through these biological and other effects. And it also harms, as you know, materials on the surface of built environment and also suppresses the human immune system. So this is an extraordinary environmental effect that in itself justified the Montreal Protocol. But the greenhouse effect from the refrigerant itself, which is the direct effect of that gas entering the high atmosphere and the like, was also serious. And then the third leg of that is the energy that's used for the air conditioner itself. Because until recently, that came from coal and oil and other polluting sources. And so this change that's occurring in Arizona at this air conditioning company has a broad advantage to society because the new refrigerants are safe for the ozone layer. They're lower in their direct effect on the climate. And the equipment itself is more efficient than the equipment that was sold historically. So it's a change for the company, and it's a heroic effort for an individual company to change the tools and the tanks and retrain the workers, but it's for the good of society. And we're just getting through that change from the Montreal Protocol, and now we're entering a new stage where the refrigerant he's using now, which is called HFC 410A, which is a blend of two of these chemicals that are ozone safe, is still a greenhouse gas. So we're making a change to a lower GWP, a less damaging refrigerant, and we're increasing the energy efficiency again. So this is a case of continuous improvement and innovation and the strength of the Montreal Protocol, that it just keeps giving the signal that you talked about, Neil, and you talked about, Chuck, that there's the profit motive, and then there's also a tremendous amount of the altruistic motive of companies that want to do better for Earth and their employees and their customers and stockholders.
Yeah, plus they get to advertise that they're environmentally preferred chemicals.
That's right.
So
they're serving the needs.
I love that. And your guys in Arizona, which last we checked,
yes,
sits a quarter mile from the surface of the sun in the summertime.
All right.
Yeah. Earth's orbit swings just in Arizona, real close.
Samuel Case, you too can be a hero, man. Make the transition. There you have it. Awesome. That was great. Okay.
Yeah,
Jeff Johnson wants to know this. Are we at the point of no return with runaway climate change? Are there any potential technologies that can reverse the effects?
Susan, let me get you to respond to that, because you, if you're an atmospheric chemist, you would be plugged into not only the causes and effects of our atmospheric transgressions, but also what could possibly be remedies to it beyond just, okay, stop what you're doing, all right? Is there some other sort of chemical geoengineering solution to what's going on here?
Well, people have talked about geoengineering the planet. I mean, personally, I'm just not a fan of experimenting with systems that you don't understand very well. So, you know.
Really? Yeah.
You know, yeah. I don't volunteer for medical trials. I mean, it just depends on how you feel about risk. But, you know, the problem is that we can't make a decision for the whole world just because some people want to go out there and go skydiving, right? I mean, some people really don't have the same values about risk that I do. So your feelings about geoengineering, I think, have a lot to do with how you are as far as risk averse or not. And I'm actually honestly pretty risk averse.
But I can tell you that on Mars, where there is no ozone layer, as far as we've been able to measure, the surface of Mars is sterile because the UV light comes straight on down. And if we're ever going to terraform Mars, we're going to need some UV shielding. And we're thinking ozone, of course. But so whatever it is, the risks you want or don't want to take are things somebody's going to have to think about if we're ever going to be a two-planet species.
That's true. But at the moment, we don't really have a lot of species on Mars, as far as we know, do we?
No.
So, you know, not quite the same level of, you know, risk to life up there as there are.
All life forms on Mars right now are robotic. Yeah. It is the robotic planet of the galaxy.
I guess, aren't people still looking for like little tiny cyanobacteria or something? I mean, you know way more.
Microbes, not on the surface, but there might be underground aquifers that would be shielded from the UV. And so there's some attempt think about it
But when you come to the Earth and you talk about geoengineering, you got to say, okay, well, maybe it's going to change rainfall. Gee, you know.
Right.
The people who are already suffering from drought in, say, Australia, you know, they might not like that too much, you know.
So, Chuck, can I answer that a little bit? So I would agree with the caller that we're at the point of no return. and that it's pretty desperate. If you look at the IPCC report or if you look at the wildfire fires in California, we're close to the end of the time where we could make easy choices. So right now, there's tremendous opportunity to phase down these HFCs I mentioned that are controlled now under the Montreal Protocol. A big part of the new opportunity is to phase down methane, get rid of the leaks of methane and cut back on the exploitation. And these gases have a short-term powerful effect on the climate. So if you take out those chemicals quickly, then you won't find yourself as desperate as to require the kind of experimental geoengineering you're talking about.
Got it. That's an important fact here, the rate at which things change, yes.
Yeah, but still, you know, I guess the question was about the runaway greenhouse effect idea. And I think that's conceivable, but honestly, there isn't too much evidence that we're close to that point right now. And one of the
that's Venus. A different kind of irreversible effect.
That's Venus. Yeah. That's Venus. And, you know, that could happen if we kept going full bore pedal to the metal. But I just don't think that's going to happen given the kind
of climate
changes
to say that
we're seeing today. So
putting the runaway effect aside, that climate change itself is kind of like a snowball rolling downhill or a Mack truck on a gradient that a decline, and that as it picks up speed, it's much harder to slow down. And then once you hit the brakes, it's still going to keep going forward no matter what.
You know, that's a misconception a lot of people have, Chuck. Let's see, where do I start with this? I guess what I'll say is the thing that is rolling downhill fast is actually the development of the commitments that we human beings have to infrastructure that uses fossil fuels, which are the source of our CO2. So the problem, and to me, it's hard to talk about it as a problem. I fervently believe that people in the developing world have every right to develop. You know, it is fundamental to their health, their future, their education,
the longevity, everything.
Name it; it's fundamental to life to go for a developing world to continue to develop. And in order to develop, if they develop using fossil fuels, as they get richer, as is now happening in our globalized society, then more and more power plants will be built and more cars will be bought. And the question is, are those going to be fossil fuel powered cars and fossil fuel powered, you know, coal powered power plants, or are they going to be clean energy systems?
So that means you see the writing on the wall based on what the future institutional societal commitments are going to be in the coming decades.
Right.
And that doesn't look good to you.
And let me inject here that the runaway is that the momentum of technology has to be turned back very quickly because you can't turn it over quick. If you look at what you own, your house, your appliances, your cars, the vacations you plan, all your property, this takes a long time to turn this over. So you've got to get an early start. And the part of the runaway I'm worried about is things like the melting Arctic and sea level rise and liberating the methane from the tundra and so forth. And those are real concerns that if you go too far with that, it'll be a long time coming back. And Susan's published this on the long life of carbon dioxide. These are extraordinary, difficult changes to make. The sooner you change, the better. And I think we're behind schedule on these kinds of commitments people should be making.
Okay, so what you're saying is, we're all going to die. That's what you're saying.
I can't believe I just laughed at that.
I know, right?
Oh, that's what we do in our field all the time, Chuck.
Okay, good.
But I just want to say one thing. It's great to roll back methane and hydrofluorocarbons and all the rest of it, but let's not forget carbon dioxide is job one.
Right.
It's really our fossil fuel economy that is our problem.
Cool.
And mm-hmm. you know, if it distracts us from working on reducing fossil fuel use to work on methane, we should definitely not do that.
Good news, we've got to be very smart. They're different people. There's absolutely no overlap that you can do two things at once, right hand, left hand. Industry's got to get moving on all of this stuff at the same time. or all these jobs will end up as job one or job less. So I would urge all the readers and the listeners of this to investigate themselves, but we've got to get going here.
All right.
We got to take another break before our third and final segment. Chuck, I think we only got to like two questions.
I know. This is
okay. We're gonna have to go like lightning.
We're gonna go quickly. Okay.
We'll do a lightning round in the third segment when we come back. Cosmic Queries: Mending the Ozone Layer on Star Talk.
Bring on spring projects with Spring Black Friday Savings from The Home Depot. With free delivery on over 2 million items, you can bring on the spring cleaning, the patio decorating, and the front yard gardening. And if you need it fast, get same-day delivery on thousands of products like fertilizer and seeds to keep your yard looking beautiful. Bring on the spring doing and spring your way only at The Home Depot. How doers get more done. Order select in-stock items by 4 p.m. subject to availability.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's time for a Patreon shout out to the following Patreon patrons: Kyle W. Orton and Frank Kotarski. Hey guys, thanks so much for your support. You know we certainly appreciate you because you are helping this show happen. And anybody else listening who would like your very own Patreon shout out, please go to patreon.com/StarTalkRadio and support us.
We're back. Cosmic Queries: Mending the Ozone Layer with Chuck Nice. Chuck, your social media, Chuck Nice Comic.
Yes, everywhere. Thank you.
Everywhere. Good, good, good. And we got with us our unsung hero guests.
Yes.
Scientists Susan Solomon and Steven Anderson, who are the recipients of the Future of Life Award.
Wow.
Given to people who you otherwise didn't hear about, but somehow managed to save the frickin' world.
Wow.
Okay. And so the fact that this award exists is kind of a weird fact, right? Because you'd think if someone saved the world, they'd be on the front page of every paper.
Right.
But what it tells you is that there are scientists working behind the scenes in laboratories. There are people who are moving agencies and institutions so that at the end of the day, an entire system has been shifted. And people don't tend to look at the contents of the sausage. They just eat the sausage.
Exactly.
Sorry to analogize.
No, and you know what, sausage. Neil, what you just said, it makes so much sense. And this is one of the problems I have with you three and everyone in your industry, is that you quietly go about your work. Why do you quietly go about your work?
All right. So we have to hire like PR people.
Yes.
Attached to us. So Stephen and Susan, this award, is it a physical thing or is it just some distinction that they hand you?
Well, it is a tremendous honor, and I just happen to have my plaque here.
Yay.
Which
oh, cool. Cool. So we got a plaque.
Actually,
so
extremely heavy. And,
yeah.
Whoops. Do I have
for those only listening.
Whoops.
That's
there
great.
There we go.
Yeah. For those only listening, it's a plaque at least 16 by 20, it looks like.
Yeah,
and
huge.
Oh, it's gorgeous. It's completely gorgeous.
Yes.
And you have to, if you didn't have a mantle to put it over, you'd have to buy a house that had a mantle to put it over.
I got to find a really strong nail because this thing is so heavy.
Very heavy. It's got the earth hanging at the bottom, too.
Right. Right underneath the earth, for those of you who are just listening, it says, thank you for saving the world.
Now, Chuck, how are your superhero characters coming along?
Oh, yeah. So right now I have the real Captain Planet and Major Ecology. So
okay, there you go. Very nice.
Yeah, we'll go with that. So, all right.
All right, so we're still, this is a cosmic query. So we've only gotten through like two or three questions. Let's see if we can speed up our answers and get a little more in on this segment. So go for it, Chuck.
Okay, so this is Nicholas Lenson who says, hey there, in the book How to Avoid a Climate Disaster, Bill Gates proposes that we will only reduce carbon emissions if we cut the cost of what he calls green premium on every human activity. It sounds like a good framework. Do you think reducing the cost of cleaner alternatives would be enough to eradicate greenhouse gases and emissions released by human activity, which, of course, in the last IPCC, it said that that we are indeed the contributing factor here. Finally, we got to that.
Well, we knew that. That's just okay. So Stephen, let's direct that to you. So, if we go back to the economic drivers that motivate people, we have green energy and non-renewable energy, and it's pretty clear to me that if green energy ever ended up physically costing less than non-renewable energy, you could change the world overnight. So where are we and where's that headed?
The good news is that Bill Gates is right, that it's a tremendous advantage that the cost of electricity from wind and solar has come down. Many of you know that right now that even if you own a relatively recent coal-fired power plant, it's less expensive to reinvest in solar and wind than to buy the coal for that power plant. It's especially true if you look at the downstream effects that you have to go through, cleaning up the coal mines, cleaning up the spoils, getting rid of the combustion byproducts. So that's happening today. And it's really just the stodginess of the infrastructure that Susan mentioned, the idea that you just have to get to work and change this over. And right now you could look at somewhere, a case like New Orleans. I don't know if you noticed that the power grid failed during the floods. And one of the huge advantages of this distributed power from wind and solar, and especially when it's co-located in the city, is you can maintain electricity for critical service like medicine and communication and so forth, even when the power grid's down. So there's lots of co-benefits. If you look at the big institutions like the United States military, they're shifting very quickly to solar and wind and distributed power, and they're electrifying things that people couldn't imagine have been done in the past. So I think that's one of the brightest spots, and Bill Gates is absolutely correct that clean energy is a big part of the solution.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. What we need is a good country songs written about solar and wind. Because they got tons of country songs about coal miners. But you never heard a country song that said, my daddy was a solar array constructor.
That's right.
Like, you never heard that.
Good idea.
So,
very good point. In fact, I just reminded myself that song from the 60s, Big Bad John.
Right.
Big. Remember that song? He worked in a coal mine. In fact, he died in a coal mine by the end of the song. Sorry to give away the punchline.
Spoiler alert.
But you're right. Jim and Dane, baked by Ed John. So you're right. There are all these like the country songs of working in the coal mine.
Right.
My daddy was a coal miner.
His daddy was a coal miner.
Daddy's daddy. So it would be really funny. A whole suite of songs. My daddy set up solar panels.
Yeah.
My daddy.
Right. So, yeah.
All right. Keep going.
Fred Gibson wants to know this. What is the most life-changing adaptations to our lives that we'll be forced to make due to our lack of resolve in dealing with climate change? And Fred is coming to us from Winnipeg, Manitoba.
So this assumes that not all changes will be smooth and easy, and maybe we'll be forced by law or by other factors. Susan, what do you have?
Well, we get to find out how tasty vegetables actually can be if you cook them correctly. You know, oh. I mean, it's not the mushy peas that my mother used to serve us out of the can, right? Which made us all hate vegetables. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm personally, I'm a pescatarian. I eat fish and vegetables. And I never had such delicious vegetables in my life until I started really thinking about how to make them tasty. And they're easy to make tasty.
And I keep thinking they should redo the Popeye cartoon series where he's looking for spinach in the produce aisle and checking it instead of squirting a can of boiled spinach into his mouth. That's a whole other outlook, right?
Oh, yeah. Man. No wonder we all hate them. I mean, they, you know.
Stay right here, Bluto. I've got to run the Whole Foods.
Okay, Popeye, but don't be too long.
All right. Okay. This is Asher Osborne. And Asher would like to know this. I've read that 75% of greenhouse gases are created by about 100 companies. Is this true? And can the average individual really then make a difference?
Good question. Is that you, Steve?
Yeah, I think that is. I haven't heard that statistic, but there are gigantic companies in the world, and certainly the 100 biggest companies would be a big part of the problem. I would just point out that those 100 companies are buying from 10,000 companies, and they're selling to billions of customers. So if you look at the whole spectrum of things, there's still a lot of room for everybody to do their part. And one of the things that's happening very quickly is the companies that have social responsibility are changing their product lines. They're changing their procurement. They're deciding that they should carbon neutralize their total effect. So there's a lot of positive things going on. But it is true that there are some giant companies that are standing in the way of climate protection. And they certainly have to be reckoned with. And that's, as Neil knows, that's a classic political problem.
Susan, what does it mean to carbon neutralize?
to go carbon neutral? Or
What does that mean?
So it means that the amount that you generate is equal to the amount that you take away of carbon dioxide.
Of carbon dioxide. So that way, whatever you do, you're not making the planet worse off.
Right, right. So if you're going to, for example, go for a drive, you go for a drive in your electric vehicle instead of your fossil fuel powered car, and you make sure that you pay the extra for the wind source, electricity, if it does cost you extra. But as we talked about earlier, just make it cheaper, and then you won't have to pay any extra for it, and that's where your energy is going to come from anyway.
Right.
So if you still have a fossil fuel car, you trade it in and get one of those cool new Teslas and just go roaring down the street.
Okay. There you go.
All right, Chuck, keep it coming.
All right, this is Helmer van der Riek, I think. He says...
Okay. You tried hard on
I
that
tried,
one,
man.
That was,
I tried. Okay.
Yeah, that's,
I
that's,
did the best I could, Helmer.
Yeah.
All right. Dear honored scientist, I am from the Netherlands, and I'm pretty worried about the rising sea levels for obvious reasons.
As they should.
Well, since your whole country is below sea level.
The whole of it, Netherlands means lowlands, right. I think. All right.
Okay. He says, but I got to thinking, Earth could become uninhabitable in many ways, some being more likely than others. In your professional opinion, what is the most likely cause for Earth to become uninhabitable? And it sounds to me like this guy spends a lot of time being depressed. Because he's just thinking about existential threats all over the place. I mean, he can't get away from how are we going out?
But, so, Susan or Stephen, which of you thinks about the apocalypse most?
You know, one of the things that the Future of Life Institute is good for is taking on the hard problems. And so one of the reasons I was so pleased to win this award is if you look at the list, it's nuclear and biological weapons, it's changes in inappropriately applied technology of all kinds, and then now it's ozone and climate. So I think there's a whole spectrum. And the way I like to look at this to remain optimistic is if everyone did their job on ozone depleting substances, greenhouse gases, including carbon dioxide, the people that are in charge of bringing peace to the world and so forth, you need all of that because there's a lot of mechanisms that could debilitate the United States and the rest of the world. I think everybody's got to do their job.
So Chuck, so Stephen has the complete list.
Yes.
Of what we'll do is in there.
Yeah.
That's right. So Steve, what are you doing here? Get back to work. What are you doing here? We need you. Get back to your desk. All right. Wow. All right. Chuck, keep it coming.
Okay. This is Cody Klebowski. And Cody wants to know this. Hello, all. The main thing I always hear from climate change deniers is that humans are not to blame for the increase in global temperatures. Can you please explain how we can prove the human responsibility?
Accountability. Susan, how do you do that?
Well, there's a lot of different ways. I guess the first thing I would say is, you know, the Arctic is getting warmer than the rest of the world. And we expect that. It's part of...
Wait, just to be clear, you mean its temperature is rising faster.
There's been more warming in the Arctic.
Right, but it's not actually warmer than the rest of the world.
No, I'm sorry.
That would be bad for Santa Claus.
Okay. No, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Excuse me, I misspoke. Yeah, so the Arctic regions are warming more because of global warming than other places. And if it was coming from the sun, it would be the tropics that would actually be warming more if it was like changes in solar activity. So that's not what it is. And, you know, it's not because the oceans in the Arctic are giving up heat, especially just there, because the oceans are actually taking up heat everywhere because they're getting warmer too. So unless you believe that there's magical other ways to make or destroy energy, which they do believe that. Some people do, but you know, Neil, your listeners are much more learned than that.
Not our people. You know, our people know what's going on, what's going down.
You got to have a source for that energy. If the whole planet's getting hotter, and that the source for that energy is because we put more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere.
So just to be clear, when the report, a report says the temperature of the world has increased by 1 degree Celsius, that's an average, and it is lowest at the equator and higher than that at the poles. But people don't think that. And then we're melting, you know, glacier ice. And so maybe they should just give what the temperature increases at the poles. That might be more alarming to people than just the global average.
Yeah, it's a good, I think, 2.5 times more. The reason is because the ice retreats and then there's more heat coming in and being absorbed. So
right,
because
the ice reflects sunlight.
Because the ice reflects.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Right. So it's a runaway process. All right, Chuck, we have time for like a half more question.
Okay, great, because I saved this one for last on purpose. Good. This is David Peterson. Hello, Dr. Tyson, Dr. Solomon, Dr. Anderson. When I was a child in the 80s and 90s, I remember the hole in the ozone layer being a very huge deal. The campaign to ban CFCs seemed to have been very successful in comparison to the campaign to fight global warming. What lessons can we learn from the ozone layer campaign and apply them to the global warming campaign?
I like it.
Yeah. I'm writing a book that's exactly about this, and I'm going to give it to you really quick.
No, don't do that. Buy the book. There's your answer. Buy the book. No, go ahead. Sorry.
It's okay. You get it for free. So the book's not ready yet anyhow. It's because people really cared. So you, the people have to care at least enough to vote and preferably to go out to your church or your social club and talk to other people and get them to care. It's political figures have to get interested and really want to try to do stuff. And, you know, Barack Obama, for example, really tried to do stuff. There were politicians who tried to do stuff back then. You got to have industry playing their role and developing new technologies, which Stephen has done so much to promote and make happen. And you got to have good science and you got to have the economics all work out. And it can do so when all those factors align with one another. That's what happened. And that's how we solved the ozone problem.
Okay. So to quote Chuck, money. From an earlier. Yeah, I mean, so it seems to me, if I were to add to that, that if you really want to change people's hearts and minds, you have to pre-invent something that they could turn to so that they can take the off-ramp and not feel like they're somehow living a lesser life.
That's part of it. But the other thing
But back to your vegetable analog, You're right. If vegetables are only the sidelight to the T-bone steak on your plate, then no one's investing anything in making those vegetables tasty. But as vegetarians have done, and as vegans have done, if the vegetables become front and center and more attention is given, and so my wife and I are doing just that. We're celebrating vegetables in ways that were unthinkable growing up in this world. So I kind of think you need it there, right, so they can say, well, what am I going to do? You're going to do this. Oh my gosh, it's cheaper and tastier and better. And then it happens immediately.
That's true. But you know what else is important is you got to realize that that steak is actually not good for you if you have it every night. You have to understand that the problem is serious and that you need to make a change. And, you know, if this year isn't convincing lots of people that it's serious, and I just don't know what to say to those people. You know,
Steven. I would like to say that Susan's right about that list, but the part the Montreal Protocol was very good at is that they worked at where the rubber met the road. They identified the technologies and promoted them a lot. And so if you compare the work at the IPCC and the work at the Montreal Protocol named names, listed technology, gave references of where you could get it. So it was a much more publicly oriented system with a lot less bureaucracy. And I think getting the companies on board with the customers really closes the gap. And the 99 ozone depleting substances are 100 or so that were now 98% eliminated, which is quite a record.
Well, Stephen, I'm delighted that you remain so optimistic.
It's true.
For someone who's as close to the end of the world as the two of you have been, delighted to hear such a positive outlook. I think that means hope springs eternal and the human spirit may be what wins out in the end. After all, we got to call it quits there. Susan, Stephen, it's been a delight to have you on the show. Congratulations for saving the world. When Chuck has his superheroes back, we'll invite you to comment on them to see if they capture what you did with
Thank
authenticity.
You. Thank you very much.
and if they Thank carry you. The right combination of superpowers. So, Chuck, always good to have you here.
Always a pleasure.
All right, we're going to call it quits there. Neil deGrasse Tyson here, your personal astrophysicist. As always, bidding you keep looking up.
Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329, during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.